Are you tired of trying to keep ahead in the rat race, only to have so much of your hard-earned money going to the tax collector? Equity doesn't pay the bills. Retirement savings don't pay you now, and there are only 24 hours in a day to work. The only solution is passive income that pays you 24/7 now, not 40 years from now. From vetted investment opportunities to tax-saving strategies, let John guide you through all the confusion and take control of your financial life in pursuit of financial freedom. So sit back, relax, and welcome to the Wealth and Freedom Nexus.
For investors seeking DSCR financing, check out timothyhero.com. The guy has closed over 150 DSCR loans in the last 2 years and has been appearing on podcasts and written about by journalists. He's well connected with some of the best lenders in the game and can get you the financing for your rental properties. Are you sick and tired of your day job? Do you think that there might be more to life than to live and die by the 9 to 5? If so, you are not alone. I left my safe and secure job in 2019, and since then I have met many entrepreneurs that have done the same thing. If you've enjoyed the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast for the educational news, tune in to my YouTube channel for the inspirational stories on how you can say, screw the W-2. Go to youtube.com/WFreedomNexus and look for the Screw the W-2 playlist. New episodes drop every Saturday and later this year will be released on all popular podcast platforms. As always, this is John Rickard, investor, educator, realtor, helping you find your way to wealth and freedom. Hey there, welcome back to another great episode of the WFN podcast. As always, I am your host, investor, educator, and realtor, John Rickard. Hard to believe we are halfway through May of 2023 with episode 83. And this was, quite a entertaining podcast, as I'll say. If you want to scroll through the show notes, you'll notice that the resources, it's pretty resource heavy. Usually my episodes, my guest and I might talk about a book or a podcast or a website or something to check out or an article of recent interest. And I don't know the numbers. I'm guessing on average, I probably have 4 to 6. And just a quick glance, there's at least 12 on this list. So be sure to, scroll down, look at the resources mentioned, try to hit all of them up that my guest and I discussed, but really wanted to take a different direction from a similar topic that I've had before with the previous guest, Dana Samuelson of Amerigold. If you didn't catch those episodes, for episode number 5 and 53, as far as gold and precious metals, even hedge against inflation. And this was very much tied into that, but utilizing a technology app in which you can basically use, purchase, and spend gold in a more practical manner than, carrying gold coins around or even silver coins like what was done in, yesteryears. And of course, nowadays it's the US dollar and, even digital money, whether it's Venmo or PayPal or good old credit cards. And with that, precious metals talk, gold talk, my guest and I discussed a lot about the US dollar and how it has been the reserve currency, for my whole lifetime and my guest's lifetime, but hasn't always been the same way. In fact, if you talk to a lot of your grandparents, maybe even your great grandparents, if they're still alive, it wasn't that long ago. In fact, if you go back just 100 years ago, or really even 80 years ago, the British pound was considered the world reserve currency, not the US dollar. And ever since World War II with Bretton Woods, that's a whole nother discussion. The US dollar was pegged as the world reserve currency, and a lot of global trade is transacted in dollars, especially with oil, which is the world's most traded commodity. If someone in Brazil wants to purchase oil from Saudi Arabia, well, instead of Saudi Arabian reals or Brazilian reals, that transaction is in United States dollars. So with the world reserve currency, compliments of the 1971 Nixon shock, again, in the resources that I mentioned, there's the petrodollar, there's the gold backing that used to occur when it comes to the U.S. dollar, but that has not been in existence for over 50 years. And where am I going with all this? Well, actually, I was looking up some stats, and you might have Googled on or maybe seen some other topics, headlines, articles as far as purchasing power, inflation, how much purchasing power has the U.S. dollar lost in, you know, the last 10 years, 20 years, 100 years, take your pick, where, you know, a bottle of Coke, you probably heard from your grandparents, well, we used to get a bottle of Coke for 5 cents, and now it's $2, $2.50, $3, maybe even higher at a gas station. And in fact, actually, this year, 2023, I turned 40. And just since 1983, that's just 40 years ago, the U.S. dollar has lost over half of its purchasing value, actually about 73%. And now this isn't a conspiracy theory. This is actually directly from the Federal Reserve of the United States. And I have, the link in the show notes. So, you know, just take that into consideration of something, you know, when you really think about it, 40 years is not that long ago. And something that costs, you know, $50 back in 1983 now cost over $100, just to give you an idea. So with this, where is this all taking us? You know, we have seen a significant decrease in the purchasing power of the U.S. dollar. We've seen banking institutions really hijack our wealth through inflation and fees and many laws and regulations that I'd say the average American doesn't even know about. In fact, I'm still shocked to this day. You know, it's been about 15 years since the 2008 financial crisis, you know, 07, 08, that there was a lot of regulations put into place after the global financial meltdown. And one of them, politically speaking, a lot of politicians were looking at, it's like, well, I don't know how the U.S. taxpayers are going to react if we have another bailout, if we have to use taxpayer monies to bail out another Bear Stearns or another Lehman Brothers or, you know, Goldman Sachs or Silicon Valley Bank, like we just had recently here in 2023. So with the regulations, they actually encouraged or have put in place what's called bail-ins. So what does a bail-in mean? Technically, if you were to go down to your bank and you deposit, you know, hey, Mr. Banker, I want to deposit, let's just say $5,000 in your savings account, checking account, money market account, whatever the case may be. Technically speaking, at that point, once you deposit that money technically is not yours. You are actually recognized as an unsecured creditor. And basically, you know, without going into too much detail, as an unsecured creditor, you are not collateralized. You are low end on the totem pole that if something happens to the bank, you know, the collateralized debtors, you know, people that have assets, maybe shareholders in the bank, preferred shares, for instance, they're going to be paid first. But you as an unsecured creditor, technically, you might be out your money. Now, one might say, well, John, we got the FDIC, you know, Federal Deposit Insurance Company, and, you know, we're insured up to $250,000 per account. Well, last time I checked, the Federal Reserve and the FDIC wasn't even in all that good standing as far as where the insurance backing comes up. So just to, you know, keep an open mind as far as the U.S. dollar purchasing power, inflation, what is money, what is currency? These are just a number of the questions that my guest and I discuss. And really just kind of take a long-term view. I mean, I've just told you about since I was born in the last 40 years, the U.S. dollar has lost 63% of its purchasing power. 80 years ago, the U.S. dollar was not the world's reserve currency. It was the British pound. So fast forward to 40 years, 80 years from now, what's that look like? Statistically speaking, every world reserve currency to date, whether it's the British pound or the Dutch guilder or previous ones, have fallen. So is the U.S. dollar's time coming up? There's been numerous talks of Saudi Arabia, which is one of the largest oil producers and the oil trading partners in the world. They are open to selling oil in other currencies, not just being hijacked by the U.S. dollar. The BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, they've actually been in talks of introducing a new currency or exchanging in their own currencies. Brazil and China, for instance, they've kind of, well, for lack of a better term, they give in the middle finger of the U.S. dollar. As far as trades between the two countries, they're starting to exchange in Brazilian reals and Chinese yuan. Russia, to avoid numerous sanctions with the Ukraine war, they are starting to trade with partners such as India and China, two of the two most populous nations on the planet. And again, bypassing the US dollar, they're starting to exchange in Russian rubles, Chinese yuan, Indian rupees, just to name a few. So like I said, this is just a number of topics that my guest and I have talked about, which is Jason Cousins, and he is the founder and CEO of Glint, where he joins us to really talk about how to take back control of our purchasing power, kind of even create a separate banking system, if you will. And now this isn't a bank on yourself concept like I've talked about with whole life insurance. This is something completely different. So with that, I hope you enjoyed this interview. I had a lot of fun recording this with Jason, and both of us had quite the dynamic conversation going back and forth. So we'll get into that interview here quick after a word from our sponsors this week.
Hi, everyone. Jeremy here. I do voiceover work for all kinds of projects. For example, do you need a voice for your phone greetings and call waiting services?
Or a villain in your next tabletop role-playing game?
How about a birthday message from someone who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
These are just a few examples, and there are no limits to what you can use voiceover for. Feel free to stop on by my website or just send me an email in the description below. And let's create something amazing together.
Hey, Jason, thanks for coming on the show. I'm glad we were able to finally get this together.
Hi, John. Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It's great to be on your show.
Yeah, thank you. Now, for my listeners that maybe, you know, have never heard of Jason Cousins and never heard of Glint, can you start with a quick background on yourself?
Yeah, sure. Well, for somebody who's disrupting financial services and trying to create an alternative to fiat currencies of the central banks, I didn't actually start in financial services at all, John. Okay. I qualified as an architect originally, as of buildings. I worked in Hong Kong for a little while, a couple of years, where I got involved in computers. And I kind of realized that wow, these are going to change how people communicate in ways that are beyond my imagination. And I got involved in virtual reality the first time it was cool, back in the 90s.
Okay.
So when they were building these Olympic stadiums and things back then, they asked me to visualize what they would look like. It was very early virtual reality. And then my business that I'd set up, we started hiring teams of engineers to code, you know, websites and build the platforms that the first e-commerce sites sat on. So my business built, designed, and ran some of the high street, the e-commerce systems for some of the high street retailers. And it was that background of, you know, digital product development, effectively like digital architecture, really, if you think about it, you're just building virtual buildings. It was that's the place I was in. I was thinking every day about how you do things better, how you could do it differently or completely new things using the emerging digital ecosystem. That was where I was at when the 2008 financial crisis happened.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I don't know what people feel about that, if they even remember it, if they were born or, if they, you know, what where they were at. But,
right,
you know, some people would remember that it was, you know, we came to the brink of a complete shutdown in that entire global financial system. And that is no exaggeration. You know, I mean, we were literally hours away from the whole thing collapsing. And you listen to some of the people who are in charge of the Fed or the, you know, the Bank of England here or whatever. And they really had, it was a huge crisis.
Right.
And it was the first time that I think, certainly I and a lot of our clients here at Glint realized that when you put your money in the bank, it ceases to be yours. It is not a risk-free deposit of money.
Right.
You know, when it ceases to be yours, it becomes a liability of the bank to you. It is lent out. There is no money in the bank. So let's just be really clear. It requires the government to guarantee a certain amount of it just to kind of give you some confidence in that. And and I thought, well, there's got to be a risk-free way of me storing my hard-earned wealth. There's got to be. What is that solution? And then when you start thinking about that, you start thinking about money itself. You know, why is it that, you know, money depreciates in ways completely outside of your control, you know? And I thought, hang on, you know, didn't things used to be a lot cheaper when I was younger?
Yep.
You know, and why is it that a burger used to cost 55 cents when I was born, cost kind of $3.55. If you're in LA, it's $20. What's happened? Has the burger got bigger? Is it tastier? Is it, you know?
It's actually and gotten so, smaller, I think.
Yeah, shrinkflation. They've even got names for things like that.
Yeah.
And I learned the shocking truth that actually the US dollar has lost, wait for it, 90% of its purchasing power in my lifetime.
Yep.
90. It's lost 90% of its purchasing power. Why are we using a currency that becomes worthless in one's lifetime? Uh-huh. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. Anyway, I learned that gold is the ultimate store of value. In the same time, you know, its purchasing power has increased by over 500%. Mm-hmm. It still buys you what it did 2,000 years ago, never mind 50.
Right.
It's not, you know, its nature is not defined by a human being. It's created when two neutron stars collide, so it can't be changed. You know, it's been used as money throughout the ages in every part of the world for a reason. It's immutable. It's unchangeable. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, you can exchange 1 gram of gold or atom of gold is worth relatively the same as a kilo of gold. You know, it's great money. It's fungible. And I thought, well, and then I learned that the dollar was backed by gold until 1971.
Right. Once upon a time.
Yeah. And Nixon only came off the gold standard because he couldn't afford to stay on it. And he was fighting the Vietnam War at the time. The French were exchanging their pallets of dollars for gold. Fort Knox was going down. So they came off the gold standard. And of course, since then, we've had this massive, gigantic, enormous. We don't have words, I don't think, to define the quantity of money that's being printed and debt that's being created, and effectively destruction of our savings. You know, we don't have words really to describe these huge numbers. And anyway, so I thought, well, why don't we just use gold as money? You know, and of course, the difficulty is you can't pop down to your local supermarket to pay for your groceries with a lump of gold. I thought, well, why can't we enable gold as money in electronic payments? And I thought, you know, I was delusional enough to believe that I could probably build that system, whatever it looked like. I'm sure I could build something that enables gold to be used as everyday money in electronic payments. And that's what we've done at Glint with the Glint app and the Glint app and MasterCard. You can buy gold any amount, like, you know, from small amounts like $10 up to millions of dollars. You can, and it's real gold. Real gold, because none of this paper gold that's out there in the marketplace. There's no token or share like an ETF that sits between you and your ownership of your gold. It's really important to me that we reduce all this counterparty risk. It's not unallocated gold, which could be lent out by the custodian.
Yeah,
this is your gold. Yeah, this is your gold. It's there in the vault. It's pretty boring, really. Just sat in a dark room, securely insured by Lloyd's of London. To enable that gold, using the app and the MasterCard, you can buy it, you can save it, you can send it to another person if you're outside of the US, bringing it to the US as soon as possible at that element. Spend it with the Glint MasterCard. And that's, by the way, spend it anywhere in the world where MasterCard is accepted. And you can buy, I literally use it for everything I do. So I use it to pay for my holidays, my flights, my taxis, my food, my meals out, my holidays. Anything I need to use, I use it for my kids' school education. I use gold. I've put myself on my own personal gold standard, so to speak.
Okay. Interesting. So, yeah, and you kind of touched on a number of points, and, you know, The Big Short's one of my favorite movies. I watched that, I don't know how many times, but here in the US, we're coming up on 15 years that, you know, the financial crisis happened, Dodd-Frank came out. And it still shocks me that so many people, I can't speak to, you know, London or other countries, but even here in the US, if you put $1,000 in a bank, you technically become an unsecured creditor because the politicians figured, well, gee, if this ever happens again, you know, they didn't take too kindly with these bailouts from the taxpayers. Well, instead of a bailout, let's just slip this bail in. They can just take the depositors' money, and we just hope they don't find out. And here we are 15 years later, I'd say maybe 5% of the population knows about that.
I'd say it's less. I mean, bail-in, G10 passing the bail-in legislation, which was tested in Cyprus, which means that instead of the government bailing out the bank, as you said, you become a shareholder instead. Good luck. Maybe the bank will be able to recapitalize itself, and maybe your shares will be worth something in a few years' time. I mean, how are you going to feel about that? And as you say, why would they pass legislation if they weren't prepared to use it?
Yeah, no kidding. So Now, and obviously with the, you know, gold high level, and I've had some other people discuss gold and precious metals on my podcast, store of value, it's been around for thousands of years. And now for myself, I'm going to speak just solely for the U.S. here. We've had, or we are having, the highest inflation that we've had in 40 years. Obviously, consumer prices are up officially 7-8%. If you go off shadow stats, it's more like 12-15%. But gold, and to be fair, this is nominal priced in U.S. dollars, has dropped about 10% in the last couple of years. I think it hit a high of 2,000. Last I looked, it's trading about 1,800. And inflation adjusted, the all-time high was in the early 80s at about 2,400, 2,500. So maybe, you know, for my listeners that aren't as familiar and they're hearing, well, gee, gold is a store of value, it's a hedge against inflation, et cetera, et cetera. But it's lost 10% in the last 2 years. What would your response be to that?
Well, look, I think what happened was, you know, we've got a number of massive economic and geopolitical shocks that have hit the world over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, if we look at the Russian invasion, for instance, of Europe, I mean, that's a significant event.
Right.
I know lots of more problems going on in the world. And investors basically have sought sought security. Where if they sought that security, they've sought it in two different places. They've sought it that offered by the current reserve currency of the world, which is the US dollar, and yeah, they've sought it in gold. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're in a currency other than the US dollar, then it looks like, you know, the price of gold has gone up. I mean, by the way, what's really happening here is that the gold is exactly the same. It's
right.
The gold constant. It hasn't changed. This is a confidence in these fiat currencies that's going up and down and generally down. That obviously okay. means it takes more to buy the gold. The gold's the only thing that's not moving. And actually, it's everything else that's moving around it. And of course, what's happening is most fiat currencies have seen, you know, an increase in the price of gold. Last time I checked, the gold in pounds was up about 10% in just the last 1 year. But of course, it's a bit like you and I get in a lift. And you're in the US dollar lift and I'm in the gold lift. And we and press the up button and we look at each other. And it's like, oh, the lift hasn't moved, has it? It's only because my lift's coming up the same time as your lift. And actually, if your US dollar lift's going up a bit quicker than mine, it doesn't look we've moved. Relative to everybody else, though, whose lifts are still on the ground floor, we've all gone up.
Gotcha.
So gold is doing its job. But actually, there is this confidence, or that a lot of people just don't have much choice, because the US dollar has been, since, you know, 1970s, the reserve currency of the world. So there's been that flight to perceived security. Where else do they go as they sell their equities? You know, as we saw the stock market crash and the Bitcoin crash, where are they selling it into? They're selling it into dollars and gold. And therefore, relative speaking, you know, the US dollar against gold hasn't performed as well in price as people would expect. But let's look at glint stats. We see the US is one of our biggest markets. It's where we have our lowest cost of acquisition. People are signing up to glint in droves, and yet it's the country where the gold price hasn't gone up the same as it has in other countries. Why is that? Well, it's maybe you got to look into our slogan, you know, gold is security, glint, it's key. And we chose that because gold is security. That's the most important thing. The geopolitical and economic situation on this planet, I don't think, has been as bad for a very long time. We've got war in Europe. We've got global pandemics, which are more likely to carry on happening. We've got insecurities around equities. We've got all-time debt. We've got massive quantitative easing, inflation. Yeah. I mean, we're, you know, I don't need to, we could go on for another few minutes talking about all the problems in the world. And so I think that whatever's happening with the price of gold, it's always it's a good thing to own, because it's secure. It can't go to zero. It never has in thousands of years. You know, we've seen 85, 90% falls in stock markets before. We've seen it in cryptocurrencies. You know, we've seen big falls in lots of different areas, but I think the biggest daily fall in the gold price ever was 14%. You know, it's that thing. Everybody knows innately, you know, I can rely on it. You know, gold price holds its value in the long term, even though it might fluctuate in the short term because of the confidence in the fiat currencies going up and down, but generally down. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no. And yeah, there was another guest, Dana Samuelson, I've had on my show a couple of times, and one of the reputable precious metals dealers out there. He kind of put it and I might be slaughtering this a little bit. I think he said the U.S. dollar is the best performing asset in the worst neighborhood, so to speak, where, you know, yes, everyone flocks to the U.S. dollar, so it's kind of artificially pushed up, but there's a big demand for dollars, depending on who you listen to. 15-20% of all U.S. dollars ever created in history were created in, you know, 2020, 2021. And now all the politicians are like, well, gee, where is all this inflation coming from? It's like,
I know,
Federal Reserve.
I mean, it's crazy. So the Chancellor in the UK, Rishi Sunak, stood up in Parliament. He's now our Prime Minister. But when he was Chancellor, he stood up in Parliament and said, sorry about all this inflation. It's caused by supply chain issues caused by COVID and the war in the Russian war with Europe. And it's like, hang on, the war just broke out 5 days before. How can that have anything to do with inflation? I mean, the fact, as you say, they're printing all this money. I find it unbelievable that nobody, not only in the press, but also in the media, wants to talk about that. You know, inflation used to mean inflation of the money supply, and the cost of increased cost of living was the outcome. Now people conveniently talk about, you know, they don't say, they talk, they just talk about inflation as the outcome, the increasing cost of living, but actually it's the inflation, as you say, of the money supply. That's the problem.
Well, and I kind of had to chuckle, you know, here in the U.S. and, you know, maybe you've heard about him in the UK, Robert Reich. He was in the Clinton administration and numerous others, and he's always on a tirade of, well, inflation is caused by greedy companies. And it's like, so when we had 2% inflation, the companies weren't greedy then, but starting 2020, then they became greedy. Got it. It makes perfect sense. So another tangent there. But now for any of my listeners, and, you know, you mentioned you've had numerous people come to Glint. Obviously, you know, I myself own some gold, and others out there have maybe dabbled in it or purchased and sold it. But maybe high level, what are some do's and don'ts as far as where, how, you know, why to, you know, purchase gold, I should say?
Sure. Well, I think the most important thing is what type of gold. And, you know, I think everybody should have some gold on them. Not too much, because you don't want it to get stolen from you.
But
it's good to have some gold. Gold coins are good because, you know, if you need to be able to sell some of them, you can use them in small denominations. So I have some gold. I think everybody should have some physical on them. But of course, the problem is that you can't really use them in electronic payments, and, you know, security is an issue. So, you know, for me, having it, when I do buy it, having it stored in a vault, secured and insured outside of the banking system. You know, a lot of people might buy, you know, gold-backed cryptocurrencies and stuff, which are all being held in, produced by government institutions and held in government vaults or bank vaults. Well, that's kind of defeating the purpose of, of creating, you know, what we're trying to do when we buy gold is effectively insulate ourselves or protect ourselves from the, what some might call the tyranny of central banks. And so, you know, let's make sure that gold is outside of that system. The next thing is what kind of gold, you know, and I've mentioned a few words before. I've talked about unallocated gold, allocated gold, ETFs, paper gold. What do these things mean? Well, let's just look at unallocated gold. Unallocated gold is gold which, where the custodian of that gold can lend that gold out. Right. Think, really? Yeah, unallocated gold, you buy it from some government, you know, organizations or banks, they will be busy lending that gold, making it work for their purposes, even though you've bought it. And of course, that's often slightly cheaper, like marginally. But, you know, it might not be there when the music stops. So for me, unallocated gold's a no-no. But if you're just interested in, you know, exposing yourself to the price of gold, then, you know, maybe that's for you, but it's not for me. It's not for most of our customers. The other thing is ETFs, you know, where, or where you're buying a share in a fund. That fund, that mutual fund, may or may not be backed by gold. It might have other things in it, like gold mining shares. It could have, who knows what it's got in there. At the end of the day, you don't own the gold. You own a share in a fund that's being managed by people. So for me, again, that's not for me and not for most of our customers. Cryptocurrencies as well. You know, a lot of these tokens. I mean, listen, I'm friends with the cryptocurrency movement. We have the same vision in mind, which is a world where everyone has an equal opportunity to prosper. We're creating independence and choice. But at the end of the day, let's not mix up the two, you know, gold and cryptocurrencies. But there are some, you know, backed stable coins that are backed by gold. And I think you're owning a token. Is then supposed to be backed by the gold. You don't own the gold, you own the token. And in most of the cases I've seen anyway. And so I think you've got to be careful about that type of thing. For me, the only thing that really is important is allocated gold. That's what Glint customers get. It's gold that they legally own. It's not owned by us. It's not on our balance sheet. It can't be touched by the custodian, the vaulting operator. And so, you know, it's the safest form of gold with the least counterparty risk. So that's the type of gold. And the other thing is something that, you know, I didn't discover really until I got into to building Glint, which is a thing called dollar price averaging. And, you know, we talk about this confidence in fiat currencies, which is going up and down all the time and generally down, which makes the price of gold look like it's going up and down and generally up. The problem with that is, of course, you might buy at a high when the confidence in fiat currencies is at its lowest,
right?
You know, you're going to be able to. You might be buying it at the high, where it takes a lot of those currencies, the US dollars, whatever, to buy it. And then for some reason, you know, the confidence in those fiat currencies can come back temporarily. That temporarily can be 6 months, a year or two, or more even. And that might be for all kinds of reasons. You know, the Fed is like constantly trying to put out messages through their news conferences, telling them how they're going to, what's going to happen. Oh, there's no inflation. There's transitory inflation. I say, yes, we have inflation. But so they're all, you know, the problem is that their weapons of fighting, of manipulating the economy, they're kind of running out of them. So they use all these types of things. Anyway, this actually manipulates markets and, of course, confidence in fiat currencies. And so I, you know, for me, buying some gold every month is the best way, because you're not just buying it all in one go. It every month. You'll get the average price over that time rather than just buying at the peak or below. You know, not even the cleverest fund managers in the world or gold broker, you know, in the world can actually get those peaks and those troughs. And obviously, maybe some people out there fancy themselves as gold traders. That's up to you if you want to be in that speculative world. But for me, you know, if you want that security and assurance, that's probably the best thing to do. You can set up, you know, an auto pay from your bank account once a month or your card or something. Just say, look, I just want to buy some gold just every month. And you just kind of forget about it, you know. And here at Glint, we're looking to bring some new functionality in over the next couple of months that allows this to be automated within the app and stuff as well, because it's the number one requested feature that our customers want. Okay. The two things I would recommend people look at: the type of gold you're buying, where it's vaulted, and you don't want any mention of yields or anything like that. I mean, something's being lent out, you know, and how you buy it regularly and often is my view. And obviously with Glint, if you're also spending it regular and often, you know, as money, then again, you're effectively liquidating your gold in the same way. So you're not just getting it all sold at potentially what might be the worst price.
Right. No, makes sense. Now, so, you know, you kind of mentioned with, you know, manipulation with Federal Reserve, you know, central banks of the world, and I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole of how and why, obviously, but high level, and I think some of my listeners know this, but it's not general knowledge, is that, you know, we already talked about Nixon taking the world off the gold standard. You can no longer redeem U.S. dollars for gold, but the back-end way to keep the U.S. dollar afloat or profitable or in demand, I should say, is basically he sent Kissinger to go to Saudi Arabia, say, hey, you control the world's oil supply. So what if we provide you arms and equipment and soldiers? We'll protect you from outside invaders. But the only thing we ask is that you trade oil in U.S. dollars going forth. So if someone in Brazil is buying oil from Iraq, let's just say, they have to trade in U.S. dollars, and oil is still the number one traded commodity in the world. In the last 2 years, we have started to see that break a little, where China, Russia, India are starting to transact outside the U.S. dollar. What are your, shall we just say, thoughts, or what are your ideas as far as where's that path going, and what happens if one day OPEC just says, yep, give us euros, give us rupees, give us Glint, give us whatever you want. We're not going to be beholden to the US dollar to trade in oil anymore.
Yeah, look, it's a really good point. I mean, as you said, when they came off the gold standard, what reason was there for the world to use dollars? And this was their solution. Let's put some context around that, a bit more, expanding a bit about what you said. So we have the rise of China as really a major world power. Mm-hmm. Quite incredible the growth of that country over the last, 30 years. Mm-hmm. You have recently the exclusion of Russia from the SWIFT payment system. You know, you have an obvious disagreement between the US and Saudi Arabia around this issue about buying oil only with US dollars. And an increasing, because of China's growth as a major world power, increasing, influence by China over the region. And then, of course, you have less dependency on oil generally, globally. There's a move towards, moving away from the carbon economy. And even the fact that the US now has, using shale oil and stuff and getting more dependent, more independent when it comes to its oil supply means it's less dependent on buying it from places like the Middle East. So all of those reasons and many more, are conspiring to, effectively erode that deal that happened back in the 1970s. And so we have seen Saudi Arabia actively, announce that they're considering oil with other currencies. And who knows, whether or not they are selling some of that oil for other currencies now, right now, as we speak, might be happening. Why not? They don't have to do what the US says. You've already seen some countries like Ghana actually saying, we're going to be buying oil with gold. We are. That's what we're going to do now.
Okay.
And of course, Russia, they've been building up their gold reserves for 10 mm-hmm. years, quite considerably.
Yeah.
And, they are now selling their oil, even though, there's sanctions from the West. There's a whole other half of the planet that's not yeah. really playing the game when right. it comes to try and restricting Russia. And so they're selling their oil for the yuan, the Chinese currency. They're selling it for gold, I think. And, this means that the petrodollar is coming to an end right now. I mean, there have been instances in the past where there were attempts to break the petrodollar relationship, like, for instance, with Venezuela. But it's a very different yeah. scenario. In Venezuela, they were very much, the whole region was very much dependent on dollars, South America. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the main heart of oil production in the world being on the other side of the planet from America. And now with all these dominant other players, the growth of Africa, the growth of Russia, the size of the Chinese economy, Asia, India's very happy to accept to be able to buy oil off Russia and evade sanctions. Russian oil has been resold.
Yeah,
I think that a lot of people believe that the end is nigh, that we're in the final thrashers of the US dollar as a reserve currency of the world. And if you look at the time frames about different reserve currencies, because the Great British Pound used to be the reserve currency of the world before the US dollar, we're kind of ending, we're about that point where it's about due to come to an end anyway.
Well, like you said, before, the US dollar is the British Pound, and going back farther, France was the dominant superpower, Spain. Once upon a time, there's the Dutch guilder. And obviously, there's been several currencies that have come and gone. So one final question I have for you, Jason, and you're the first guest I've had on my show that I thought might have a interesting take on this, because this is something I've always wondered about. Back in 1971, we already alluded to, gold was going out of the U.S. and dollars were coming in. And Nixon, right, wrong, or indifferent, was saying, oh, gee, all these dollars are coming in, all the gold is going out, we're going to be stuck with all these worthless dollars and all our gold is going to be gone. And I got this war in Vietnam I'm still trying to fund. So I'm just going to cut off convertibility and the US dollar is no longer backed by gold. If by say either, if we could rewind 50 plus years or start fresh going forward, where a monetary system of some sort, there's currency, whatever that is, and it's backed by gold, it's independently verified, insured, etc. It's just not redeemable for gold. You can't go in and turn your paper currency for an ounce of gold. If that system was set up, could that in theory be a stable monetary system worldwide, or would there still be some flaws in that, you think?
Well, of course, we're asking this question because governments have become too cavalier about their borrowing and their printing of money since 1971. Nixon actually was supposed to, the gold window, convertibility window was closed temporarily originally.
Oh, yeah, temporarily.
It wasn't supposed to be a permanent thing. And of course, they kind of got away with the petrodollar deal to be able to maintain that interest. But, you know, what would we see? Well, you'd certainly see savers retain their purchasing power. I mean, there'd be less inflation. You're effectively, what happens with the, with money printing is that, you know, effectively governments steal the money off their own citizens. You know, the debts that are created through promises to the electorate are paid back by, you know, effectively, it's the greatest untalked about tax that we have in our system. I think that we'd have maybe more, potentially, you might have more honest politicians, if that's even possible.
Is there such a thing?
Well, they couldn't promise things they can't afford. I mean, that would, that of course is going to create a huge stress in society as society comes to terms with the fact that, you know, you can't necessarily, you can't spend what you don't have, you know, you've got to keep your, you know, books straight. You can't just get into undying credit. You have to have more long-term sustainable models for the economy. I think we would have steadier, but maybe slower growth. You know, there's no Elon Musk couldn't, I don't think he'll be able to, you know, raise the kind of money he's raised to build these rockets to go to the Mars or to build a completely new dominant electric power company and boring companies and whatever else he's doing
by Twitter or by Facebook.
He wouldn't be able to do that. And, you know, that's not a bad thing either. Three people, I think it used to be five, but I think it's now three people. In the US, three people own more than 50% of your country. I mean, that's insane. It's not because they are extremely more productive. It's because how is money printed? When it's created, it created through banks. They lend it to people. Who do they lend it to? Well, I'm quite fortunate. They will lend it to me. I can go out and buy assets, and those assets become more valuable. Unfortunately, you know, someone who's less fortunate than me can't go out and borrow any money. In fact, the people who need to borrow it the most can't get access to it. And all they see is everything becoming more and more expensive. Stock markets, property, you know, and I was sat in a restaurant in Paris just as I was setting up Glint. And it was like as if the universe just sent me this message. There was this American lady and her daughter sat next to me on one of these French style sharing tables. And I heard them chatting, and the mother said, the daughter said, I've given up all hope on me ever being able to order priority and a property. And the mother said, I've told her just not to worry about it. So you have this massive disparity. And of course, you know, if I can borrow some money, someone like Elon Musk or other people could borrow ridiculous amounts of money and they can put that to use and build assets, really. Is that fair? I'm not sure it is. And so I think, you know, for me as well, and not just having less inflation, but what's so wrong with a deflationary environment? You know, and I've asked economists this all the time, but actually surely through technology and through the development of technology and better standards of living, we should be leading to a world where things cost less and less.
Yeah.
And we've seen recently, you know, the emergence of, well, a step change in impact around artificial intelligence with OpenAI. I mean, it's blown me away. And I'm sure it's got more constraints on it than my imagination is letting run wild in my dreams at the moment. But, you know, it's definitely a big step change. And we can see now that AI is just on, it's just around the corner. And you combine that with robotics and things like that. You know, these are the things that are going to mean that a lot of stuff is done for free or for, you know, at very low cost. Of course, the problem with this, if it happens too fast, is that we're going to see massive disruptions within our societies and our economies as we try to work out what we're going to do with ourselves as we lead a life which is, you know, where a lot of things are done automatically or done very cheaply for us. But look, there's going to be less central bank manipulation. You know, is that good? Is that bad? Well, you know, I don't think we'll have the booms and the busts because it's that kind of government human interventions into what should be a perfectly running kind of capitalistic system. It's the distortions caused by these human beings, I think, creates these booms and busts. You know, I was listening to a radio station just this morning, and they were talking about capitalism, and they were going on and on about how, you know, capitalism creates these these difficult inequalities and all of that. And I was just shouting in my head in the car saying, guys, it's nothing to do with capitalism. It's to do with the monetary system on which it runs. It's to do with the bad oil at the engine that runs in the engine. There's nothing wrong with people working hard and creating a better life for themselves. The problem comes when this distorted monetary system comes through. There'd be no massive swings around stock markets and stuff when the Fed comes out and makes a statement about their policy that may or may not happen in the future.
Yep.
You know, it means that the US and all of the governments have to live within their means. Mm-hmm. I think it means less inequality. I think it means no, or certainly less wars, because you can't afford to go to them if you aren't printing money. Mm-hmm. But I would say that it's unlikely to happen.
Sure.
I don't think that voters are ready for the reforms. I don't think that politicians want the reforms. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I set up Glint, was say, look, don't wait for your government to make these changes or central bank to make these changes. I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
You know, give yourself, let's create a bottom-up return to sound money. Let's put ourselves on our own personal gold standard.
Makes sense. So, all right. Well, I appreciate your time, Jason, and appreciate all the insights you gave my listeners. If anyone is interested in learning more of creating their own gold standard, looking more into Glint, what's the best way to reach out to you, find the app, download it, or learn more about the program?
Well, yeah, just head over to glintpay.com. That's Glint, okay. GlintPay, glintpay.com. There's been no better time to get yourself on your own personal gold standard. You can simply go to your favorite app store as well, search for Glint or Glint Pay, download the app. It only takes a few minutes to register. Most of you will get approved, I would have thought, quite quickly, and get yourself on your own personal gold standard. Start using it to set by and save gold, use it to spend gold when you need to.
Perfect. All right. And for all those listening, I'll have this in the show notes, but again, the address is glintpay.com. Jason, it's been a pleasure, and thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.